The Guardian.
Football Weekly is sponsored by Squarespace. Make your next move and create your next website using Squarespace's all-in-one platform. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code Football Weekly to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain.
Football Weekly reporting for duty on our agenda. Lithuania, Defoe mania, Neil Taylor taking international break all too seriously, and an injury for Coleman that was anything but minor. And Netherlands at the pits. There's South America, word from yonder, much to ponder, your posts, and all sorts of other things in this special International Football Weekly. That's right, everybody. Special international pod today, incorporating breaking news. Producer Ben, what's the breaking news situation? There's no breaking news yet, but as it happens, we'll be across it here on Football Weekly. What we've got for you is Michael Cox.
Hello, James.
Hello, Michael. You're looking very much in shape.
Oh, thank you. Cheers.
He's had a big breakfast today as well. Toast and Weetabix. Exactly. James Horncastle.
Good day to you, Jimbo.
Good day to you. Did you have a cornetto?
No, I didn't. I had poached egg.
Bang. And how did you use the vortex method?
I did, yeah. It's only the second time I've done it. I was always put off by it.
It looks dangerous, doesn't it?
Yeah.
No, but it's actually...
It's very easy.
It takes care of itself. Mm. Decanting the egg is where the problems lie, I believe. Simon, how did you break fast this morning?
I had...
Simon Burnton, everyone.
Hello. I had yogurt with a bit of granola in it.
Bang.
I've got these poaching cups, very good for a poached egg.
Right.
You don't have to vortex anything.
Well, I feel that's a little bit like having stabilisers and going for a bike ride.
I mean, perhaps, but they do produce championship eggs, whereas stabilisers don't produce championship cyclists. I mean, they might do in the long run, but not right away.
It's an interesting topic, but we've got to talk about England's game with Lithuania. Hands up, who saw this? Oh, Horncastle, what were you doing instead?
I kind of forgot it was on.
Right.
I thought it was going to be on in the evening.
Yeah, it was a different time, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then I checked Twitter and it's like Defoe has scored. And I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Well, Defoe did score.
Mm.
Yeah, and so did Jamie Vardy.
Yeah.
Does anybody know yet how Jamie Vardy came about his black eye?
He and his wife on Twitter both insist it was contact with a ball.
Okay. In training?
Presumably.
Right, okay. Anyway... a 2-0 win for England. Gareth Southgate continuing his good start as England manager. The big talking point was Jermaine Defoe's return to the team and his goal at the age of 34, which is 3 years older than Lukas Podolski is when he's retired. What did you make of it, Michael?
I thought it was a very dull, very predictable home England qualifier. Just really slow tempo. I thought Lithuania, as expected, were very defensive. Slightly too physical at times, I thought. England did the job. I don't think they played particularly well. But the two goals were very nice.
Mm. Any other thing? Anything else that excited you? Simon, was there anything that thrilled you?
Well, one thing that didn't thrill me was the choice of by Glenn Hoddle on commentary of Jermaine Defoe as man of the match. I thought he was pretty peripheral. I mean, he scored his goal fairly well.
Mm.
But there was an absence of things he was offering. Like, he doesn't hold up the ball well. He doesn't work as a kind of pivot at the front of the team. His contribution to all-round play is minimal. I mean, he is alert in the penalty area. I think there was a big absence of Harry Kane.
Who would you have given man of the match to?
Of the attacking players, Lallana played well. He is kind of really bright on the ball and in possession. And his movement off the ball is excellent. I thought the two fullbacks played well. We relied on them quite a lot. In an attacking sense. And so, particularly Walker on the right has such pace that he can, you know, get forward. And when he does need to cover in defence, he can get back there pretty fast.
One of the joys of the game was seeing Michael Keane pinging those crossfield balls out. One of which Walker collected and put in an astonishing volleyed cross.
Yeah.
It was one of the most spectacular. I mean, it came to nothing. But just as an example of coordination, it was quite spectacular.
Yeah, a couple of eye-catching. That was a great cross and volleyed from near shoulder height, right on the touchline. There was also a Marcus Rashford corner kick late in the game, a wickedly dipping in swinging corner. I mean, I'm not sure I've seen him take corners before. He played wide on the left, but was quite a bright presence for, while he was on the pitch. He created a good chance for Vardy with a decent through ball. And there was that corner. And there's an ongoing issue of who takes England's corner kicks.
With Harry Kane being injured.
Absolutely. Yeah. Whether he's injured or not. I mean, it continued to be, I thought, a minor issue yesterday. The quality of set piece wasn't fantastic. I feel that that's one thing Ward-Prowse offers. He's made his first appearance in the England squad.
What about Ross Barkley? How come he doesn't get to have a go?
I think I read somewhere 6 consecutive England games he sat on the bench without being called on.
I mean, if that was a club, you'd suggest that something had happened between him and the manager.
Yeah, I mean, successive managers.
Overall, though, as I say, good start for Gareth Southgate against a mentally limited opposition. England, the only side in 2018 World Cup qualifying yet to concede a single goal, the only one.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we'll leave this whole Lithuania business then, shall we? More dramatic, perhaps, will be England's next game, which is against Scotland. That's on 10th of June. They dramatically are beginning to claw their way back up that qualifying group. They've risen to giddy heights of 4th after that. Basically, they beat Slovenia despite the best efforts of Lee Griffiths.
Who hit the bar with an extremely good chance that he really should have scored. Mm.
Well, it was the amount of build-up that had gone into making that chance. All that hard work, all the way up the flank and the running, etc. And the ball's pinged in and he's there alone in front of goal.
And randomly side-footed his volley high. And then he hit the post with a more difficult chance with a better effort. And really, Scotland seemed to play pretty well. They might have needed an 88th-minute winner.
Yeah.
But it was a decent performance, given they drew at home to Canada last week.
Well, that's true. Jan Oblak, of course,
yes.
Beaten. Not an easy thing to do. They go into fourth place. Slovakia moved into second. They beat Malta. James, another game you didn't see. They beat Malta 3-1 in Malta. And that's all very exciting. Northern Ireland had a fine win. They beat Norway, Lars Lagerbäck's debut on the Norway bench, but ended in defeat for him, 2-0. So Northern Ireland stay second in their group behind Germany. Germany are whopping 5 points ahead, but they did concede a goal against Azerbaijan. While Ireland-Wales was a bad game with a very, very bad tackle.
Yeah. It was a goalless draw, and that meant that there was nothing to distract attention from Seamus Coleman's horrible second half leg break as a result of a challenge from Neil Taylor.
A lot of people saying that the referees, to a degree, complicit in this for not sanctioning more heavily Gareth Bale's own studs up effort on, was it John O'Shea in the first half?
I wasn't sure that was a red card from Bale. I mean, his studs were showing, but contact, there wasn't an enormous amount of contact.
Okay.
I thought that he was booked and he was warned, and I thought that was probably appropriate. And I don't think that excuses. I mean, it was a very ugly challenge from Taylor. It wasn't like he had to cover a lot of ground, was making a desperate lunge to try and, you know, make up space that he had conceded. He just flung himself at Coleman from point blank range. Both the execution and the outcome were ugly.
Right. Well, best wishes to Seamus Coleman because it looked absolutely horrific. I mean, it takes a certain amount of strength of will even to watch the replays of it. But as the tackle goes in, you can see his leg flapping as he flies through the air. And then Shane Long coming in to help him with his breathing exercises afterwards, which seemed to do something. He was incredibly brave. I mean, the way his leg was destroyed, and he was still quite composed, Coleman, as he went off. He's out for what? I mean, anybody's guess right now.
6 months, but
yeah.
Matt O'Neill's
quite
up
quick now.
Matt O'Neill's update was surgeons are very, very pleased with the operation. It's been pinned and screwed.
Right.
It's still many months before we'll see him again.
To be honest, you never hear them coming out and say, we're very disappointed with the
surgery. The doctor said they made a complete botch of that one.
Yeah.
I mean, it does seem in recent years that injuries like that, players can make a fuller recovery. Hmm. And it wasn't so long ago that you say that kind of injury might sadly be the end of his career. But these days, I think things have improved and hope to see him on the pitch sometime soon.
Right. Whether he would still approach a challenge in quite the same way, something we'll have to...
It does take time to get over. I mean, you look at someone like Aaron Ramsey, who famously suffered a very bad injury at Stoke, and I think psychologically it did take him a while to go.
You
into
hear a lot
like
from co-commentators about how you can't get away with anything, or you can't make any kind of challenge now in the modern game. Is a match like the one between Ireland and Wales evidence that, in actual fact, there's still quite a long way to go in terms of reducing the possibility of? It was a match that was approached by both sides apparently with a real intent to show the other team they were in a proper battle.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's relatively rare you see a game like that in the modern age. But yeah, it was. I mean, the defining feature of the game was the physicality and was both teams trying to kick each other, basically. I thought it was a terrible spectacle. One of the worst games I've seen for a long time.
Wow. Commiserations to Seamus Coleman. Best of luck for the long road back. And Everton supporters.
Yeah, I needed a new fullback in my fantasy team now.
Well, yeah, and that's the real issue. Yeah. And who have you gone for?
I haven't chosen yet.
Well, smart managers, James, jumped on that because, of course, 1:20 in the morning UK time is when the price changes happen. So I don't know if you got caught out by that, but I imagine there are a bunch of managers who were selling Coleman in order to avoid that price drop, which was a problem because I was forced to go searching for alternatives without having done adequate prep. Mm. And when I tell you that I ended up with Gibson out of Borough, you'll know the depths of my dilemma.
Are you aware that your fellow BT man, Owen Hargreaves, is flying high in the fantasy
football? Yeah, well, he is flying high. He's in the top, I think, 250?
200, yeah.
200?
200, I think.
In the world. There's 4.5 million managers, of which probably 2.5 million are active. There's a lot of people who sign up at the start of the season, but they fall by the wayside, let's say. Only some of which are beating my team. however, Owen Hargreaves... he has a team.
Oh.
Not just the players he selected.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not all his own work. I think that's fair to say.
Oh. Yeah.
But yeah.
You've spoiled it now.
Yeah, I have. right, that's Producer Ben doesn't want any more of that kind of chat, which means that after this, we're going to talk about what the heck's going on with Holland.
Create a beautiful website or online store with an award-winning template from Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code FOOTBALLWEEKLY to get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website.
Right, next up then, it's Netherlands. Fresh from a 2-0 defeat to Bulgaria this weekend, they fired their manager, Danny Blind. Mikael Jongsma joins us now on the line. Mikael!
Good afternoon, James.
Good afternoon to you, Mikael. And it is, I think, a good afternoon for Netherlands supporting folk like yourself. Is that right?
Yeah, there's almost a sense of liberation, which might be a bit too dramatic, given that the problems didn't only rest with Danny Blind as a manager. And it has been way more structural than that, even though the World Cup success under Louis van Gaal kind of glossed over what was already quite a difficult period for Dutch football.
Right. Of course, as many countries have found out of late, liberation is only really a positive thing when you find out somebody better is replacing the one you've got rid of. So who is going to be taking over, do you think?
I think that's been the reason it has taken so long as well. Danny Blind was very, very reluctant to get out of the job, basically. But it kind of tells you volumes that he's used 47 players in 17 games as a manager, only one against Kazakhstan, Belarus, and Luxembourg in the qualifiers in his 9 games tenure. So, yeah, I think the reason it's taken so long is that it's really hard to find a viable option. When you look at Dutch managers, and I think we've touched on this before, the only one that really jumps out is probably Ronald Koeman, who has the merit and experience to become a Dutch national manager. So, I mean, Frank de Boer looks like an option because he's won the title 4 times with Ajax, but he has that stain on his resume of Inter, which wasn't a success. And apart from that, Louis van Gaal has been mentioned again, given that he has something to make up for after his time in Manchester. But yeah, quite a few people are actually saying, well, maybe we need to do something different. Maybe we need a foreign coach. And in more general terms, the Dutch FA should really have a look at itself For a couple of years, the overall excuse has been, well, Roland Flaar got injured and he was important during the World Cup. Kevin Strootman had a horrific injury and is now finally on his way back. And I think that's the main thing as well. For a while, there had been the excuse, well, this is the least talented bunch in decades when you look at the Dutch squad. But when you look at the team that faced Bulgaria, you had Arjen Robben on the right, Golden Shoe contender Bas Dost as a striker, Quincy Promise, who's been one of the best players in the Russian league, Jorginho and Aldo is holding his players down in Liverpool, Kevin Strootman is having a really good season at Roma. So yeah, I think that's been one of the main things as well.
So hang on, because I'm confused. You're saying it's not one of the... It doesn't sound like a bad squad at all, a bad group of players. Depay, for example, also coming into form?
Yeah, absolutely. It is of course, fairly relative. I think in the mid-80s, there was a bit of a slump with the Dutch national team just after Cruyff had retired from the Dutch national team. But ever since the Euros in 88, it's been talent galore, basically, with such magnificent talents. And at the moment, it's probably Arjen Robben that's the only one that's really seen as world class. But on the other hand, it still is a squad that should be more than capable of at least finishing second in this group. And I think, especially with the emergence of the aforementioned players, but also Stefan de Vrij doing well at Lazio together with compatriot Wesley Hood, Jasper Cillessen being a backup but still being a Barcelona goalkeeper, there is a new wave of talent coming, and I think that's been quite crucial in dismissing Danny Blind right now.
Right, so it does look like it is an issue with him rather than the available players. Danny Blind lost as many European and World Cup qualifiers in 9 games as the previous 4 managers had in 58 matches, which is certainly impressive. I noticed in your list of possible replacements, you didn't mention Steve McLaren, who certainly would be at home. You're 3 points now from second place, but there are 2 teams between you and that playoff position. Mikel, are you going to make this World Cup? And if you don't, how calamitous would that be, missing out on 2 straight international tournaments?
One of the many stats that has been flying around is that the last time we missed 2 consecutive big tournaments, we actually won the next one, because that was in 84 and 86, and 88 was the one big success. But yeah, on a more serious note, the game against Sweden was probably one that the Netherlands should have won. And they still have to face both Sweden and Bulgaria at home. It is all in their own hands. I mean, the only thing that you have is that I believe that the worst number 2 won't be joining in for the playoffs anyway. So that's the big fear that is out there. A result against France away seems to be necessary to actually make something of this campaign.
Wow.
But I don't think that we're in such a pinnacle that we're not going to make anything out of this.
Well, fingers crossed then, Mikel. Thanks ever so much for joining us.
Always happy to do so.
Oh, lovely. Speak to you soon then.
Will do. Bye.
Thanks, Miguel.
If you do want to see some Dutch total football,
oh, yeah.
Did you see the Ajax goal against Copenhagen last Thursday night?
Did I?
Probably not. Seek it out, because it's one of those team moves which begins from the back, every player touches the ball, opposition can't get near it, and they eventually score. It's a wonderful goal.
Beautiful.
Which kind of reminds you what Dutch football is all about.
Glorious. Simon, for football fans of a certain vintage, it's unsettling seeing the Netherlands in this kind of problems.
Yeah, Holland are the glorious Brazil of Europe.
Mm.
Their bright orange shirts illuminated many tournaments in the 70s and the 80s, late 80s.
Mm.
And really, they should be superbly good. I guess the question now is whether Ronald Koeman will be dragged into this discussion about their immediate future. Their next coach. He's previously he applied for the job once before in 2014 when they chose Hiddink instead. And last year he said that he would always take the post given an opportunity. It's hard to think they wouldn't ask. I mean, whether Everton's current strength is sufficient to distract him from that long-term public ambition to manage his country, I don't know.
Right. So it could be a doubly bad international weekend for Everton fans.
Well, indeed.
Oh, well, to lighten the mood then, how about this from Ali Khan, who sent in a long email of a kind of, well, with his friend Ben, a kind of conversation featuring some pretty clever wordplay. highlights include, well, hopefully they are heading in the right direction from here.
Ooh, you could argue his sacking was a long time coming.
Their goose might be cooked. Time to get De Jong players in.
Blind had to pay the price of her losing.
I think it was a cry for help from the Dutch FA. That's my favourite.
You're the only guy who would bring Cruyff into this.
All right. Fred Grimm taking over the Netherlands side for their friendly against Italy this week. Italy, they had they're fresh from a 2-0 win over Albania. We did the Gigi Buffon love before, but feel free to mention his stats.
Yeah, his 1,000th appearance. What? Yep. How many clean sheets is now in his
426.
Career?
So he's played 1,000 games, yeah. And not far short of 50% of them, he has not conceded a goal. That's pretty phenomenal going.
It is. And Daniele De Rossi, he scored, I think, his 20th goal for the national team, which takes him level with Paolo Rossi. He's the 12th all-time top scorer, the highest scoring midfielder. You think of some of the players he's outscored.
That's crazy.
Playing for the national team. Yeah. It is phenomenal. You're looking at players like Viali, Mancini, Di Natale, Zola, Totti, Ravanelli, Balotelli, Rivera, Luca Toni.
Silenzi,
yeah. All these players, and that's an extraordinary record. I think now, in terms of appearances,
yeah.
I'm not sure whether he'll play against Holland, but he's closing in on Zoff.
Is he?
So, yeah.
Wow, that's extraordinary. Yeah. Italy, with that win, continued their record of never losing a World Cup qualifier at home. 51 games they've played. They won 44 of them, lost none. Immobile's goal was nice, wasn't it? The header.
Yeah, beautiful goal. Yeah. They're quite optimistic going into this game, which is still 6 months away, against Spain, which I think will be in Madrid. Automatic qualification will come down to that. They played a 4-2-4, which is where Ventura is going with this team at the moment. But as we've seen, particularly at the Euros, Spain and at the World Cup, Spain have a problem when they play against 3-5-2. So would they go back to that? I think the issue for Italy is going to be that game will take place just a game into the league season.
Right.
So they might not be
at their best. Traditionally, that's when Italy struggles. August, September matches.
You think of those Champions League playoffs, you know, they go into it half cooked. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I nodded when you said, you know, Spain have a problem with 3-5-2. But actually, what is the problem with the 3-5-2 for them? Can you explain in really short words? Historically, what is it? Chile?
It's Chile and
Holland, I suppose, at the World Cup.
Holland as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Italy.
Mm.
At the Euros.
At the Euros, yeah, yeah, with Conte, yeah.
So what is the issue tactically with 3-5-2?
Xavi explained this really well.
Ah, what did he say?
I can't remember what his explanation is.
I think they struggled to press high up the pitch in both games. The front three pressed the three Italian centre-backs, but then they didn't have anyone to shut down the wing-backs, so the Spanish full-backs were coming really high up the pitch and then were getting done with balls in behind.
Oh, right. Did you just make that up?
No, that's how they lost to, certainly to Chile and to Italy, actually. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, you could see Italy fielding a 3-5-2, no, with Belotti and Immobile up front, no?
Yeah, it's just whether they go back to that, because I think Ventura's been quite eager to take them in a different direction.
Mm.
And he recognises that a lot of Italy's best players coming through are all kind of wide players.
Right.
And when you play 3-5-2, you're looking more at wing-backs than kind of attacking. With.
Okay.
So, but they're very optimistic.
I think
in the Italian camp.
We'll see. Come September, Simon. What was your favourite thing about this weekend? It was Mother's Day, of course, on Sunday. Hello, mothers.
Yeah. What was my favourite thing, football wise?
Yeah. If there was one. Perhaps you thrilled to Spain's victory against Israel. Perhaps you were relieved by the thought that Diego Costa might not be as injured as he seemed when he limped out of training, although Conte's monitoring that with interest, I'm sure. Maybe you were heartened by Azerbaijan scoring that goal against the Germans, but then getting beaten anyway.
Yeah.
Or perhaps you marvelled at Cristiano Ronaldo, whose goal-scoring record for Portugal now reads 9 goals in 4 matches.
Yeah, Portugal and Germany are wild scorers of European qualifying, I think. So England are the only team left who haven't conceded a goal, but we've only scored 8 goals in that time, and Germany have scored 20 and Portugal have scored 19.
Wow.
Ronaldo's only one goal away from moving into the top 10 international goal scorers of all time.
Wow.
And joining Miroslav Klose on that list.
Really?
The only recent player on that top 10.
Right. Producer Ben says he's moved closer.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
back to your point, Michael.
Just quite a nice moment was Kosovo scored their first ever home competitive goal.
Really?
Which was quite a big moment. A player called Adhi Nihiu, who you'll know from turning out for Sheffield Wednesday.
Oh, that
one. Of course. Yep. He scored a bullet header. Quite an interesting story. He grew up playing for the Austrian youth teams and always dreamed of playing for what he then considered his natural home, his Albania. Indeed, once scored in an under-21 game for Austria against Albania in red and white boots to commemorate the fact that he considered Albania his home country.
Okay.
Fast forward 7 or 8 years, he never actually played for Albania, but obviously Kosovo, a relatively new team in international terms, declared for them. This was his debut, and he scored a very fine header. And it was a great moment because it was actually a consolation goal in a 2-1 defeat to Iceland. Nothing wrong with losing 2-1 to Iceland.
No.
Sign of a great side. Mm. But despite the fact it didn't count for anything on the night, it was a great... It looked like a fantastic atmosphere around the stadium and
right.
a massive moment for... For the country of Kosovo.
Absolutely. Are they still experiencing difficulty getting their paperwork through UEFA Central in terms of registering players who'd previously turned out for others?
Yes. I mean, this was... Nihiu hadn't played for another international country. So even though he had to declare himself as Kosovan, there was not that complication. So that was relatively simple.
Right.
But with others, yes, it's still proving problematic.
Right.
Gibraltar were playing as well against Bosnia. And they have three brothers who all play in defence.
Really?
Yeah, the Cipollinas. So they're all rocks
feel like
at the back.
A trapeze should be involved somehow.
Yeah. It does sound like a travelling circus.
Yeah. And how did they do, the Cipollina brothers?
They conceded
Cipollina
five.
Means onion, of course.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Can you imagine an England team fielding three onions at the back?
I had onions in the cricket team for a while.
Really?
Graham onions. Yeah.
All right. Protecting the onion back, says producer Ben, who's taken something today. That's exciting news. Thanks for that. It's so exciting. I've completely forgotten. Oh, I was going to say that part of the excitement, such as it is of international breaks, is not so much who's winning and qualifying. It's who's going completely in the wrong direction and having a total nightmare. And we heard from Mikael Jongsma re the Netherlands, who he insists are actually not going to have a problem at all. That means we have to turn to South America to see if maybe Argentina are going to completely stuff it up and provide a big story there. What's the latest, Michael?
Well, they won 1-0 in their big game against Chile. A guy called Lionel Messi scored. Remember the name. I think he's going to be big. It wasn't the most fascinating South American weekend. In the end, Colombia won 1-0.
Well, we haven't finished with that game, surely. That plunges Chile into the nation in crisis slot. They dropped to sixth, which means they're not even in the playoff with an Oceania team, which, yes, listeners, can't include Australia because they're not in Oceania. I knew that. That was Paul McInnes' mistake. So they're in sixth place, admittedly only on goal difference, but still, the Copa America champions, not going to make it to Russia.
No, doesn't look like it. But Argentina have got problems themselves, Jimbo, even with this win, because they play Bolivia on Tuesday night in La Paz. And Bolivia, when they played Colombia in this last round, just gone, they kind of rested all of their players, especially for this game against Argentina. So not only are they going to have the altitude to
How high is
with,
it?
It's 11,000 feet, Jimbo.
I think it's more than that, isn't it?
Slightly more than that.
Isn't it 11,913 feet?
Yes,
yeah.
Specifically. So it's actually nearer 12,000.
What's the impact, I wonder, on a professional player playing at that? I don't know if you saw the film Everest, but there's quite a momentous speech at the start when the guy's explaining to all these people who are going to be trying to ascend the mountain that, you know, effectively at that height, your body is dying and you've got a certain window before it does actually shut down. You know, that's the kind of altitude that jetliners are cruising at.
Yeah, the last time Argentina...
Certainly one's towing Arsenal banners. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Michael.
The last time Argentina went there 4 years ago, it was a 1-1 draw, but Lionel Messi vomited on the pitch because of the altitude, and Angel Di Maria had to have oxygen administered.
Is that legal? Surely the whole point of their home field advantage is...
Yeah. I mean, he was on the same way that if you break your leg, you know, you get oxygen going off.
Oh, we see, once he'd stopped playing.
Yeah,
he's not allowed to run around with a tank.
No. No. And the time before that, 8 years ago, was quite a famous game when Bolivia won 6-1 against Argentina. And that was when Argentina were really on the brink of not qualifying for the 2010 World Cup.
Right.
And saved it, of course, by appointing Diego Maradona.
Absolutely. Well, right now, they've alleviated their problems by climbing up to third, but it's still tight. So very tight. And of course, Chile will be looking to bounce back from their own little slump. But Brazil, they've pretty much wrapped up their place, Simon. That's their seventh straight win under Chite and possibly the most impressive so far. Why? Because it was away against second place Uruguay and they came from a goal down.
And Paulinho scored a hat-trick.
Paulinho with a hat-trick.
Did you see his hat-trick goal?
I thought his first goal was very good.
His first goal was fantastic. But yeah. The third was somewhat unusual because he chested it into the goal.
Did he?
Yeah.
What was his first one then?
It was outside the box, screamer, top corner.
Right.
Yeah.
We won't talk any more about Paulinho because he used to be a Spurs player. Yeah. Did you see Coggia's, I believe I'm pronouncing that wrong, Coggia's goal for Ivory Coast? Anyone see this?
I saw Zaha's goal.
Oh, how was that?
Which was pretty special. Right. Again, Maisie dribble, goes past one, all two, right. Three, boom.
Well, Coggia, who turns out for Aston Villa, that's where he plays his club football, he basically receives a long hoof upfield. The defender's all over him, but he strong-arms the defender. He basically circles the defender while holding him off with a straight arm and then unleashes a wonderful shot to the top corner with the outside of his boot. I haven't done it justice. I liked it. USA, Simon Burton.
Yeah, they finally got some points on the board, and how?
Wow.
They smashed Honduras to the tune of 6-0.
Woof. So, getting rid of old Jurgen Klinsmann and bringing in Bruce Arena seems to be paying dividends.
So far, so good.
Yep.
They're still lagging a bit behind.
They're fourth, and only 3.5 teams make it out of that group.
Well, that's right. And they play Panama away next, which should be a straightforward game. And
I think they've had problems with that one before, though, haven't they?
In theory.
Yeah.
But yeah. Whether they can put that into practice, Panama are a point ahead of them currently.
Right. Well, 6-0, as you say. Most notable points that I took from that was a very encouraging display from Borussia Dortmund's wunderkind Christian Pulisic.
Yeah, a couple of assists and a goal.
Yeah, so. And who were the assists for? Clint Dempsey.
Deuce.
Yeah, back from his heart problem.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he had, a heart murmur or something? He had to stop playing and that, but he's been brought back. And he had a hat-trick in that game. Brilliant.
Chicharito is now the all-time top scorer in Mexico history.
Right. Well, is he not pulled level with...
He's matched with... Yeah,
Jared Borghetti.
Borghetti, yeah.
So that's... And they're top, I imagine, of that group, are they?
Yes.
Yes. Right. I think USA's next game is against Trinidad and Tobago, isn't it?
Their next game is at Panama. Trinidad and Tobago are at home to Mexico.
I'm so sorry.
The Panamaniacs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice. By the way, listeners, if you're flagging, up next, it's our post section, and boy, is it a doozy. Anything else about international football?
There was one thing, again, going back to Italy, because it was the debut of Patrizia Panico.
Ah.
She's the Italy under-16s manager.
Hmm.
And, she's the first national team coach, as a woman, to be coaching a men's team in Italy. And all the players call her Mister.
Right.
She had a ill-fated debut. They lost 4-1 to Germany.
Oh.
And Aga Khan scored for Germany.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Quite the match, that one.
Sorry, who?
Aga Khan.
I don't think it was that one, Michael.
No, not that.
Okay, right.
Not the Aga Khan, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The Aga Khan.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we mentioned already the Australia-Oceania thing. Dolly Mix says, it was actually Gary Megson's Bolton that beat Atletico Madrid. Yeah. The Ginger Mourinho. That was back in 2008. El Hadji Diouf scored the winner. And Aguero was sent off for Atletico.
Diego Simeone was talking about his future this week.
So oh, yeah.
He's going to stay next season
is
at Atletico. But he's had offers to leave and 35 million reasons to leave. Apparently that was the contract that was put on the table by someone. He didn't mention who.
Right.
But it may be Chelsea or PSG in the past. So, interesting.
Okay. Jazz Horse says, my wife is a native Minnesotan. We were talking about Minnesota United. And she tells me their state bird is the loon. That's why they're called the loons. Minnesota's football team. It has a low mournful call that can be heard across the frozen lakes of the North Star State. They are the size of a large duck, or if you prefer, a small goose. Interestingly, in the UK, these birds are commonly called divers. Insert hilarious football pun here. You've got the wrong podcast there. Yeah. Alan Turvey says, little factoid, as well as the nickname for Minnesota, the Loons is also the nickname of Forfar Athletic. In Northern Scottish, the Loons roughly translates as the lads. Oh. Ruinart also has that about Forfar. And he adds, Easter Road's not in Glasgow, James. Though some might say it's not in Edinburgh either. Yeah, thanks to you and many people who posted in with that little detail. Chris Stapps Paddock, remocking Atlanta and Minnesota teams for being named United. It's well-deserved. Americans aping European clubs extends from the geriatric Europeans playing in the league to the scarves to the team names. At some point, we'll have our own traditions, but maybe not just yet. That said, adds Chris Stapps Paddock, San Diego look to be getting an expansion team in the next few years and are holding an online poll to determine the name. At the time of writing, the third place name is San Diego Bad Hombres, which is fantastic. That's got 84 votes. In second place, it's San Diego Surf with 211 votes. And in first place, Footy Face with a whopping 706 votes. So I guess Americans can do their own soccer football thing sometimes. By the way, Chris Stapps Paddock posts a little a link to the voting site. So if you want to get on board there, San Diego Bad Hombres would be terrific.
Yeah.
It really would.
Not Footy, but Footy Face.
No.
Come on.
That ship sailed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Franco77 says, obviously the Ranocchia bit last time was a bit lighthearted, but I would have liked to have heard the guy's thoughts on this quote from Andrea. It is this is him talking about playing at Hull. It is fun, although there are hardly any tactics at work here. It's mainly instinct and physical strength. The players are so strong and fast, but I'm settling in well, mainly because the Italian tactical school is the best in the world, so I'm prepared for anything.
Yeah. Manuel Gabbiadini said exactly the same.
Did he?
He said, like, in Italy, I get a lot more closer attention by defenders. They usually man-mark me. It's touch-tight, very physical. Here, they all kind of play zonal. I've got lots more space, and I score goals.
Hmm? All right.
Unless he's playing against Ranocchia, maybe we'll have to
see. Yeah. Right. What a clash that's set to be. Now, oh, there's more more posts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All goalies are mad has 2 points for us. One, India is a pretty big country. And two, you never think of their footy team. We mentioned.
Yeah, with Canada.
Yeah, with Canada. You did your homework, didn't you, Michael? Robert Dale adds a colossal stat to this. He says, India, with its billion-plus population, has won fewer medals at the Olympics in its entire history than Australia won just last year. Wow. That's incredible, isn't it?
Once they get cricket in the Olympics, that will all change.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, India lost 4-0 to Iran in this international break, and Iran are now kind of running away at the top because they're two close contenders, South Korea. I think the other one is Uzbekistan, lost to China and Syria.
Really?
Respectively. Two of the big shocks. But see, China actually doing quite well in that sense, actually. Upsetting South Korea.
Machalalipi's China. Wow.
India, currently managed by Stephen Constantine, I believe, a well-travelled Englishman.
Stephen Constantine. Should I know that name?
Perhaps not, but he's had a very interesting career managing lots of exotic foreign countries around the world. This is his second spell in charge of India, and he's also coached Malawi, Sudan, and Nepal. And in the middle of all that, he had a particularly scary spell in charge of Millwall Reserves.
Oh, okay. He's kind of like the Roy Hodgson of his generation.
Absolutely. Give it 20 years and he'll be in charge.
Wow.
I've got vague recollections that I spoke to him once. I think it must have been while he was in charge of Nepal.
Okay.
But I can't remember anything that he said or I said, so we'll leave it at that.
Okay. How did Canada get on?
I think Canada have already stopped getting on in terms of World Cup qualification.
Oh, really? How come? Think
because there are only six teams left in North and Central America.
Oh, right.
Qualifying, and they are not among them.
Oh, good work, Simon. Portlander says, Spurs fan here. Oh, yeah. To say that talking about us during an internationals week doesn't count. It's like getting a run out in a friendly. Sorry, Jimbo, you need to give us a pre-Arsenal slot for a pod where it really counts before we stop giving you a hard time. Smiley face. Well, what's going to happen on Thursday? Because, of course, who is Spurs playing? I know that Arsenal have got Man City, so that's going to be big news.
But we should talk about them in an international break because apparently Mauricio Pochettino has been over to Barcelona and held some talks with some people.
Has he? About what?
Well, that was a story earlier in the week. And he,
what kind of talks? Like taking over as a manager talk?
Well, apparently he's good friends. He's been friends with Bartomeu.
But he said, when he was asked about this before, he said, manage Barcelona, but I have a bull tattooed on my heart. I'm not sure figuratively or what. He's away at Burnley at the weekend, so it's pretty superb.
Barcelona to Burnley.
Yeah. Any other business? Simon, you want to bring back the Rumbelows Cup final 100 metre sprint. What's that?
Well, it was the subject of an email from producer Ben.
Oh.
But there used to be a competition to find the fastest footballer in the English Football League that involved, you know, footballers actually getting together and racing over 100 metres.
Hmm.
And there was a Rumbelows Cup final that was preceded by the final, which had a £10,000 reward for the winner.
All right.
These days, you kind of get emails occasionally saying there's been some survey of statistical information of football matches, and they have decided who the fastest player is, and it's Gareth Bale again. But, yeah, you want to see some...
Who would be in it? I'm thinking... Kyle Walker?
I think that back in the day, every club in the Football League proposed a player from their squad. And they went through regional sprints that were covered in... perhaps St. and Greavesy showed them.
Mm-hmm.
And you proceeded through various knockout rounds, and the fastest players got to the showpiece final.
Right.
Sprinted for 10 grand.
Okay. Well, I think that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, drama.
You could have all sorts of different athletic challenges.
Certainly. A bit like
it's a knockout. Greased poles.
Yeah, weightlifting.
Bingo.
FIFA.
Right. And you can have them playing football against each other. See who comes out on top.
Let's not go too far.
All right, then. I think that's an excellent idea, Simon. Also on the agenda for this final section, we have Billericay, Michael Cox.
Oh, yes.
They've been in the news.
Yes.
What tier of English football are we talking here?
This is back to Isthmian news, which we touched on a few months ago. This is seventh tier of English football. Mm. They've been taken over by a Essex millionaire who's ploughed his fortunes into it. And they've signed a couple of notable players. Ex-England international Paul Konchesky, mm-hmm. is now turning up for them at left back. Jamie O'Hara, who was last spotted on Celebrity Big Brother, is there. They've got investment from the only way is Essex's Mark Wright.
Not familiar with him, but okay.
No, me neither. And he's not the same Mark Wright who played for Liverpool in the 90s.
Okay.
And they were going to sign Carlton Cole, but I think that has not gone through. But the best thing about this is the chairman, he had a few games and put up with the manager and then sacked the manager and appointed himself.
Right.
Which is just what we all want to do.
Yeah, I mean, why would you as a reality... He's not a reality TV star.
He's not, no. But he's in charge, and they've actually got very good results since he took charge. Including a win over Dulwich Hamlet at the weekend. Away at Dulwich.
He's managed to fashion this team of ragbag ex-internationals into something that wins in the seventh tier of English
football.
I know,
it's a remarkable feel-good story.
How does the rest of the Isthmian League feel about this incursion?
A mixture of... kind of tutting at the fact that, you know, money's distorting it, but also it's quite exciting to see an actual footballer at that level.
Yeah, that's true.
Actual footballer.
Yeah. I mean, considering these are part-time players, you know, with 9-to-5 jobs, you get someone like Paul Konchesky, it's very exciting.
Mm.
I mean, the Carlton Cole thing, he would tear up that division, Carlton Cole, so it's a shame that hasn't gone through for them.
Carlton Cole used to have his own app. It was one of my favourite football apps. There used to be a Carlton Cole app. He had, like, recipes and he wrote stuff about his mum.
And what is it? Doesn't exist anymore?
I didn't download it onto my new phone when I replaced my phone.
What made it an app rather than, say, a blog?
Because it was an app. You downloaded it from the App Store.
Okay.
They had fantastic Carlton Cole-related content.
Asmir Begovic has a podcast.
Oh.
What's it called? Asmir on Sports or something
like
that?
It's got a really weird name, yeah.
Have you listened to it, Michael?
No, I just saw it advertised yesterday, and it was, you know, you got to do something on your international break.
I suppose you do. Indeed, most of the week when you're Asmir Begovic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm. That's interesting. Of course, the continued incursion of reality TV into the world of football has also surfaced in Italy, where Palermo's new president is an incredibly over-tattooed. We've discussed this before. Mm. Listeners, you might have been asleep. A tattooed gentleman. I can't remember his name.
Paul Baccalini.
Well, you can.
Yeah. Mm.
Anyway, thanks Simon B, but not that Simon B, for posting a picture of a sheep farmer on TV who with the name caption is Andrew Barr. That's nice. And, oh, God, the David Silverites are out once again.
Not again.
Yeah, I've lost who posted this in, but it was a stat from David Silver's completed more successful passes in the final third, 677, than any other player in the top five leagues this season.
Well, he has incredibly twinkly toes.
He does have twinkly toes. And he scored, of course, didn't he, for Spain against Israel this weekend. So, yeah, David Silver's shoveling his twinkly toes down my throat. Once again, that unbelievably is all we've got for you this week. I mean, we've got more, but Producer Ben says that he's run out of tape, so that's where we're going to leave it for now, listener. We'll be back on Thursday, maybe you will too, as we look forward to round 30 of this Premier League season and much, much more, as well as reacting to all these internationals that we care so much about. Brilliant. Many thanks to Michael Cox, to James Horncastle and to Simon Burnton for being with us today. And you, listener, have yourselves a super week. Catch you Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.